Let's make this fleeting moment last forever. So tell me what you're waiting for. I'm gonna keep it frozen here forever. There's no regretting anymore. It's worth the wait, even so far away. I'm making the night mine until the day I die. No light to break when you're hanging by fate.
Of the Gamer Horizon podcast. This is episode 6. I am Alex, and I'm joined by the entire crew of the Gamer Horizon podcast this week. And of course, if you've always wanted to check out like all the video games that you've ever wanted to play in your entire life, maybe, or something that you're interested in playing within the next few days, next few weeks, next few months, always go to GamerHorizon.com for all your news, reviews, and pretty much everything. So today is a very special day because not only do we have everybody from the crew here, but we're also, you know, recording this on a day that Sony pretty much announced the PlayStation 4. And you can bet that that's going to be the very first thing that we're going to be talking about here. So let me introduce everybody in case you don't know who we are. So starting with Anthony, how's it going, dude?
It's going quite well, my friend. Just kind of mind blown from the whole press conference still.
We also have Ted. Ted, how's it going, dude?
I'm pretty thrilled. I was shaky all day watching the show. And then all I can think of is all the people who work at Sony look like they might be child abusers.
Wait, why?
What the hell?
Okay, so Ted, why child abusers? What?
You look into their eyes and you can see something that only... You know, I don't want to name names, but if you've ever watched the Tester Season 3, which was a Sony-produced show, it was a reality show.
Mm-hmm. No, why would you watch that?
Because I had to. Because I had to, Chris. Because I was writing reviews on it. And I was so thankful when I found out that the entire media team from Sony had been let go that was responsible for that show.
Ouch. That is kind of weird and kind of quite an interesting fact, I guess. Anyways, moving on. We also have Ari. Ari, how's it going, dude?
Oh, it's going all right.
Yeah.
Pretty happy, actually. I enjoyed the conference today.
Jolly. And we also have Chris. Chris, hey. How's it going, dude?
My mic works now.
Yeah, well, nobody knew that your mic was not working. So that's pretty much, you know, that ended that discussion. So anyway, so let's go through all the new stuff that we have on our website, like, right now. So... Ari, obviously, you're going to have your review out within the next few days. We're recording this, obviously, on February 20th, so that's going to be quite incredible, I think. But, Chris, you got Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, and you posted, like, the trailer and stuff, so we're going to be talking about that, what you've been playing. I'm really interested in what you have to say about that. Okay. And, you also wrote this article about the PlayStation 4 and the unlucky number. How did you come up with this? Like, this was kind of interesting to me.
You know what? I heard, just watching little things on the web, individuals talking about the PlayStation 4, and they just mentioned that 4 was a unlucky number in Japan, and it just had me intrigued because they never really said anything else about it. They just mentioned that, and... You know, I was wondering what the hell is going on. Why is 4 an unlucky number? Why would that impact Sony? But, you know, they bring it up and just switch topics. So I end up having to look it up myself.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I never really understood like why
there's this kind of weird superstition, like in Japanese culture, even though, of course, I've studied a little bit about it. But it is kind of interesting to kind of note that. And of course, you know, to our surprise, the PlayStation 4 is the PlayStation 4, but it's not the PlayStation She, which is, as Ted, I think, added to the article and stuff, it's actually 4, right? I think that's
4
what
can
it
be pronounced two ways, She or Yon.
Okay.
So a lot of people say Yon because She is like, oops, you know.
Yeah, interesting. So yeah, so we have that on the website. You know, like actually a really interesting read. So I would go check that out if I were you. We also have this other article by you, Ted. It's the Project Diva American Location Test. So do you want to talk a little bit about this?
Yeah, I do, actually. So it was some news I happened to come across because I'm a Facebook fan of Round One. And they announced, hey, we've got Project Diva. And to a lot of people, this is like crack, especially Vocaloid fans or rhythm game fans, or they tend to overlap. So I got my butt down to Round One. Mm-hmm. The next day, and I actually happened to get one of the rare Project Diva arcade memory cards, you know, those little cards that they give you for like Initial D or Tekken. Mm-hmm. And they are now out forever.
Oh wow.
And I have one, so it's like, all right. But it okay, as rhythm games go, it's not even the most difficult looking rhythm game. There are four buttons, that's it. You either press one or more than one at the same time, or you hold one down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
So how does the gameplay work? Because from what I saw on the gameplay video that you posted with the article and stuff, it seems like there were like symbols that were like dropping from the top of the screen. So does that work in such a way that if they match up with the symbols that are on the middle of the screen, you have to tap it? Or is that
it's like every other rhythm game where a note crosses a threshold, you have to press the note right at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it. The difference is in this game, the thresholds can appear anywhere on the screen, so you just have to keep your eye out. But that actually helps you keep your eye on the whole video, because one of the draws of the game is the Vocaloids and
yeah,
them running around and being cute in Japanese and whatever.
Yeah.
But it is what it is, and I can tell you that it basically has a line forever, continuously, and that people do not stop playing it.
Really?
That line goes about 8 to 10 people deep at any time. I think the line clears out maybe on Friday or Saturday nights.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that line is deep, and it is that's a great sign for that game, because there is a chance that after the location test ends in March, it'll come back a month later permanently.
Oh,
but
wow.
That hasn't been decided yet. They are waiting to see. But right now, Round One has been getting a lot of games. Round One in Puente Hills, which mm-hmm. is also the Back to the Future Mall,
yes,
if you are historically inclined.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually were the location test for Tekken Tag Tournament 2. And they've had other location tests. Well, they're actually one of the few places in America you can play Tekken Tag 2 in the arcade.
That's really awesome.
Well, that's sort of sad, because there aren't too many arcades left. And I feel like Round One might be taking business away from, say, Super Arcade in Walnut, which is kind of the last fighting game arcade we have here in Southern California. Because we lost a lot of arcades recently.
Yeah, I mean, what was it, like Family Fun and then now, like, you know, Super Arcade, right?
Well, I'll say this. Maybe someday I'll be able to talk about what's going on with Super Arcade. Right now I can't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's an interesting story, and it really makes me think about this arcade business that we're all interested in and a part of.
Yeah.
But right now Super Arcade is still alive. I'm going to be going to a Wednesday night fights at the conclusion of this podcast,
mm-hmm.
and hope that stays around.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, support arcades.
Yep, for sure.
I support arcades.
Of course.
Alex knows that.
Yeah. So, all right. So we also have like a couple of other articles here. And of course, like Ari, I know, you know, you can chime in at any time. You come from a line of musicians.
Yes, yes, I do.
Rock Band DLC ends in April 2nd.
Yeah, that's sad. Though at the same time, it's also worth celebrating, because it's really the longest running DLC schedule of all time in video games. So it's pretty commendable what they achieved with it.
Yeah.
You knew it was going to happen. Eventually they were going to cross the line where it wasn't going to be profitable anymore.
Yeah.
And you knew that time was going to come sooner and sooner. But one thing that they have said is the last song they are going to release on April 2nd is Appropriate.
Hmm.
So does anyone have any ideas?
Not a clue.
Is it going to be like a freeze pop song? Because, of course, it's like, you know, like a harmonics. Like
that would be cool.
You know.
It's not going to be Stairway to Heaven because there's no way they're getting Zeppelin.
That's true.
People have been asking for another Muse song for about 5 years, so maybe we'll get one. Maybe we'll
Nexus
actually Adonia get one.
Is still only in Guitar Hero, isn't it?
That is correct.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, okay, so obviously, Anthony, there's not going to be an opinion from you about this thing.
No, you know why? Because I don't give two shits, because I hate rhythm games and the story game over, yeah.
Okay.
Game over, yeah. You know, I just hope that if, you know, whatever their next project is from Harmonix, I hope there's a way to continue using the library that we have.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, Rock Band Blitz. I thought that was, like, a pretty novel idea to be able to use your entire collection, you know, in that game. I thought that was really awesome. I still have to buy it, but, you know. Chris, you were going to say something?
Yeah, this is a little off-topic, but it's related to headlines. And it's the PlayStation Plus updates. When does Vanquish actually hit the PlayStation market?
It should have been there, like, yesterday.
Okay, yes.
It's all there now.
Whoa. Calm down, baby. Have a piece of cheese.
I just saw it on there now. I downloaded it.
Jeez.
The PlayStation Store updated very late yesterday, but it did come out for free along with Mega Man Maverick Hunter X, which, by the way, no, wait, that's not leaving next week. Leaving next week, I believe. Oh, yes. Leaving this coming Tuesday is Ninja Gaiden Sigma Plus for Vita. Mm. So that's very soon for you listening for this podcast. So get to downloading. Mm-hmm. I do not know what is replacing it yet, but it's going to be a game you can play on the Vita.
Yeah.
Hi-o.
Hey. Well, yeah, that whole Vita lineup is going to be interesting. Like, if they manage to go through every single Vita game that's out, which, you know, is to say not a lot.
So are you guys actually excited about Vita with the PlayStation 4?
Dude, we're not even talking about that yet. Dude, what is wrong with you? We're not even there yet. We're talking about current headlines.
That's current. Just happened.
Well, fucking asshole. Anyways.
I don't think you get how showmanship works, Chris. You don't just go to the main event and then walk away, because then everyone's like, oh, you know.
It's like, you know, like I think we discussed this in like the Royal Rumble or something. Anyways, so let's go back to this. So the other news article I want to talk about was actually the recent reveal. And this is kind of funny because it's easy to forget that this just happened this past Sunday as well, which is the unveiling of Destiny by Bungie. So who wants to start with, you know what, I'll ask Anthony because he hasn't talked yet. What do you think about this whole, you know, project, I guess?
You know what, from what I've seen of it, you know, of the reveal, and then I know they've showed some more clips in the PlayStation event. Can I talk about those? Or
just a little bit, yeah, sure.
Yeah, okay. It looks like the world is alive. It really does. I mean, you know, that's the impression I got from it, you know, you know, you see, you know, people moving around, just the structures, just the massive size of it. It looks like a real, like, living, breathing world to me, I think. And it's something that, you know, I told you this before, Alex, with Halo. I always told you Halo kind of, the Bungie Halos anyway, not Halo 4 per se, always felt kind of static, you know?
Right.
But it seems like Bungie rectified that from what I've seen of Destiny, so I'm excited to see more of that.
Okay. But wait, you got that the world is, like, alive just by looking at, like, you know, moving, like, concept art? I mean, I'll be honest. Like, most of, you know, the Destiny reveal is moving concept art. And they maybe showed a little bit of, like, in-engine assets. It's like, you know, it's so early that you know, like, when they showed the characters, you can even see, like, work in progress tags, like, all over the friggin' thing, you know? Yeah.
Right, I get that, but I think that's what they're aiming for, though. You know, I think that's
they're
what
aiming
they're
aiming for a work in progress game.
No. Smart ass. No, they're aiming for a living kind of breathing world. You know,
okay.
Type of approach. So I think it looks cool. I think it does from what I saw.
Okay, so Chris, how about you? Because obviously you're like the second most active, you know, fan of, like, Bungie in the group. I mean, that probably isn't true, because I think Ted is also a big fan, because he's played, like, Spartan Ops, but what do you think
since
of Destiny?
Since 1993.
Well, there you go. Since Marathon.
It's a little
Actually,
too
no,
early for
before
me.
Before Marathon.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a little too early for me. They haven't showed enough. I want to actually see gameplay footage, stuff like that, so.
Like, Well, they showed, like, your character reloading tonight. That's technically gameplay.
Yeah. I mean, they actually did show more. Actually, I think they showed a little more than they did when they revealed it.
Yeah, wasn't there, like, actual, like, action shots on that?
Yeah. Hmm. But not enough for me. I want to see more.
Okay.
I will say I am excited to see it, but I really just want to see more of it.
Okay, well, we'll see. I mean, that's kind of like asking and begging for, like, you know, more information about a game that's been in development for, like, God knows how long. So, I mean, yeah. they will try to draw this, you know, out as long as possible, just like, you know, their plan for the game, 10 years. Anyways, Ari, what do you think of this?
I'm with Chris. I want to see more. I want to see exactly how the multiplayer is going to work in the game and what's so innovative about it and how it's going to actually come together in a finished product. But for now, just have to wait and see.
Yeah, it's almost as if, like, the excitement was tempered by the PlayStation announcement in a way, because, I mean, I remember when I covered the Destiny reveal and stuff like that, like, everybody was, like, really kind of hot on it, and then all of a sudden we realized that, oh, by the way, we're not showing you and letting you play the game, and I'm like, what? You know, like, how far along is this game? I mean, if you guys are planning, like, a massive 10-year thing, this better be, you know, something that'll last 10 years, you know? Like, I don't know. It's just weird to me, but... How about you, Ted? What do you think of Destiny so far?
It's Guild Wars with guns.
and it's kind of funny you mentioned that, is because, like, the first time I saw, like, the whole concepts of it, like, the first thing that came into my mind was Planetside. Yeah. So, I mean, I've never played the games, but it's like, I don't know. Like, I guess it depends on how they're going to handle the whole thing, so... But in any case, so that's pretty much, like, all the news that we want to talk about on the podcast. But if you guys want to check out all the other articles and news articles, impressions, reviews, and whatnot, you can always go to GameHorizon.com for all that really good stuff and whatnot. So in any case, let's move on to, like, my favorite segment, because, you know, this gets us, you know, talking about the games that we've been playing. Obviously, this is the What You've Been Playing segment. So... Because Ted wasn't here, I do want to have him talk about the newest DLC for Assassin's Creed 3, which is The Tyranny of King Washington. So, how is the game?
How spoilery can I get?
Well, that is a good question. Well, I don't know. How about you guys? Like, you guys have any opinions on this?
I'll have to get off the podcast if you
can. Yeah, I want to play it.
I don't care. We'll talk.
Oh, man. Because I'm trying to figure out what I can say that doesn't give the game away while telling you that the game... Okay, it's not a spoiler...
Is George Washington in it?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, you spoiled it.
But the name of the game is King Washington. That is not a spoiler, Chris. You are not. You're not with us tonight. What is wrong with you?
It's been revealed that the game takes place in an alternate universe.
Okay.
Where... George Washington has gone mad with power. What I've been able to figure out is that maybe... Because remember, this is the first part of a trilogy. And there's a lot they're holding back.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm getting some clues that... I think there might be some weird animus juju going on here.
Mm, okay.
Because only Connor knows that... Wait a minute, this isn't normal. George Washington was a cool guy. And we beat the British. And then his Connor's mother is like, what are you talking about? And also, he never became an assassin. He was never inducted in the assassin order. Mm-hmm. That never happened.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great moment when his mother gives him his father's hidden blades. And Connor is like, yeah, I know what these are. She says, how do you know? He says, well, yeah, I know a lot. The game, the narrative of the game assumes you've completed the original campaign, but you don't really need to because you kind of know what happened in American history. But I can say this about the gameplay. It doesn't feel like normal Assassin's Creed. It's a more self-contained environment. There's no notoriety. The side missions involve running up to NPCs and pressing circle or having a small skirmish. There are no convoluted, deep side missions, and there are a total of 7 or 8 campaign missions. You can finish this DLC in about 2 hours.
Okay. Well, let me ask the other guys, because, like, they're probably interested in this, too. So, Anthony, do you have, like, anything to ask, like, Ted and stuff as far as this is concerned?
So you said it's more of a self-contained environment, right?
Yeah, you in part one, you're not doing anything in Boston or anything in the cities. You have a different map. There's no money to accrue. There's no shops to go to buy or sell. There's no crafting. It's basically just action, action, action.
So basically it's, you know, not so much of, do you still like climb rooftops and things like that, you know?
Yeah, but basically you do that immediately before you jump off to kill someone.
Okay. So it sounds like, you know, it sounds like you do more sword fighting than you do in the actual main game.
Would that be more correct? Absolutely. And I want to add that the set pieces they have in this are just amazing. They do some great stuff. This one fight, they just keep throwing more and more people at you. They throw more blue coats, if you get it. They are called blue coats. And eventually the camera pans out and you just see seas and seas of people, but you're still fighting and playing. And then they take away the user interface. They take away the health bar. They take away everything. You're just looking at a screen. You just keep fighting and fighting and fighting. And it seems hopeless. And the music starts taking a minor tone because it seems hopeless. Wow. And then you manage to beat off a bunch of people, but George Washington shows up, and one of the reasons he is a Mad King is because he's got a piece of Eden.
Mm-hmm.
And he uses it against you. And wow, I don't want to say what happens next, but that was pretty brutal.
It just seems like a really fantastic, like, alternate reality and stuff, like, as far as, like, the Assassin's Creed universe is concerned. I mean, all the promotional artwork that had George Washington as a king did have his staff with the piece of Eden there. And that was actually the very first thing that I looked at, because I'm like, wait a second, that's a piece of Eden.
That is correct.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that's interesting in this DLC, and I'll give this away, is there are hidden collectibles you can get called memory fragments, which are snapshots of the actual timeline of Assassin's Creed 3.
Okay.
And that's interesting to look at. I haven't found everything. I'm still piecing things together, and I am more than halfway done with this DLC. But I'll say halfway through, you get a power that just makes you completely broken.
Mm-hmm.
You get the power of the wolf.
Oh, I've heard about this.
Now, remember, the whole point is, since you're not an assassin, they've really go deeper. He works with his tribesmen to gain powers. He drinks tea brewed with a forbidden herbal root, mm-hmm, to go on vision quests. And yep. So he can turn invisible. You press triangle, he turns invisible. Mm-hmm. No one can see him. You can kill people silently. If you kill someone in front of someone, they can't touch you. That's pretty broken.
Wow.
The downside is using this power drains your health gradually and it can kill you.
Mm-hmm.
So you basically want to get in, do what you're going to do, and get out. But if you're going to run from cover to cover, yeah, you're completely invulnerable.
Jesus.
So it definitely changes the feel of the game. It doesn't feel like the same Assassin's Creed. And I think that's a good thing. And I'll say this, you know, Assassin's Creed 3 took about, what, 6 chapters to get really going?
Mm-hmm.
This takes 6 seconds.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's a little on the short side, and for $10, you may wonder, is it worth it? But it's 2 hours of just completely enjoyable action, and I think my review is going to reflect my attitude towards this.
And we also talked about, you know, the whole value of, you know, the value proposition of a 2-hour game versus a $10, you know, like, price point and stuff. And I think that based off of your enthusiasm and stuff, like, it really comes across that it almost seems like this DLC should have been what Assassin's Creed 3 should have been to begin with.
Yeah, I feel that way.
Yeah. Okay. So anybody else have anything to add to this? You know, Ari, Chris, anybody?
Nope.
Not, you know, because I know, Ari, you haven't.
I've already heard way too much about this game.
I'm going to buy it anyway.
Yeah, I think after tonight I'm going to buy it, definitely.
If you get the season pass, it's the same price, but you also get all the pre-order bonuses and a few other pieces of content. So if you're going to buy all 3 parts, you might as well just buy the season pass and get a few extra things.
Mm.
Good to know.
Yeah.
And one of the ways they're going to get you is you're going to complete this DLC and you're like, wait, it's not over. Dang it. And then you're going to wait a month and buy the next part.
Hey, it's almost like episodic gaming. Hey.
Oh. I love episodic gaming.
Half-Life Episode 3, please.
You want to talk about episodic. Holy crap.
You've spoken of the forbidden game. But yeah, you can generally tell I'm leaning favorably. In fact, my review should be out by the time this podcast hits the airwaves. I'm looking to finish it pretty soon.
Yeah, definitely. I'm looking forward to it, too, because I do want to kind of read up on it and stuff like that. So, anyways, Anthony, let's get back to you, because I know you want to talk about Aliens Colonial Marines.
Fuck you.
Sounds a lot like last week.
No. It's worse than last week. Fuck that game. Oh, my God.
Tell us how you really feel.
You know, our reviews have been nice and happy and stuff. This review, not so much. I mean, let's simply say that the xenomorphs in this game are not xenomorphs. They are masochistic lemmings that like to run into your gunfire.
Not fun.
Let's also say that the game has a ton of game mechanics that they don't even fucking use. For example, let's look at Call of Duty. You know, I'm critical of Call of Duty, but it's a solid shooter for what it is. In that game, the actual aiming button is useful. Am I not correct?
Sure.
You know, aiming. Okay, let's put it this way. Aliens Colonial Marines has a fucking aiming button that I have not used in the 3 hours I have played the motherfucking game.
Jeez.
God damn. And then, let's see, there's a jump button. Haven't used it. There's a scanner. Used it once in the whole game. You know, the switching weapons is the most clunkiest thing I've ever done in my life. Screen tearing is like a dimensional rift. Oh, my God.
This is sounding like a resounding recommendation from you, by the way.
Well, buy it.
This will probably be the standard for our lowest review score for a while.
Oh, man. Maybe. I think Anthony is still trying to figure out what to give it at this point.
You know, to its credit, the one thing that the game has going for it is...
Lance Hendrickson?
The voice acting. The voice acting is good, but I was also thinking about the sound, but then I told you that story earlier today, Alex. I'm going to tell the rest of the group. This is how bad the sound effects are in this game. You know how in the Alien films, the aliens capture people and they put them in those, like that slime thing on the wall and the chest bursters bust out of them?
Yeah.
You guys, yeah. Okay. There's a scene where, you know, you're in this room and a guy's trapped in there. And I was in the corner of the room and I heard the guy talk and he sounded like right next to me. Literally, you know how good sound effects in the game, they sound right next to you. So I looked in that corner for 5 minutes, could not find him. Then I go all the way across the room, and he's in the fucking other side of the room. That game is...
Just total silence from everybody. I think everybody's, like, trying to imagine that, like, you know, like, kind of scenario right now in their head. Like, wait, what? Where is the guy? Where, what?
Oh, Jesus Christ. But on the bright side, I got a Wii U, so there you go.
You got a Wii U. Awesome.
That makes only Ari and Chris in the group.
Don't remind me.
Without a Wii U.
Yeah, got a Wii U, and I got, I got three retail games. I got, what was it? Mario Brothers, of course, Zombie U. And then I got Tekken Tag Tournament, because I heard that this version of Tekken Tag Tournament's got a lot of content that the other versions don't. So,
is that true, Ted? I've never heard of that.
There are a couple new modes in Tekken Tag Tournament 2 for Wii U, and there is... I'm sorry, I'm looking at a guinea pig. Did I mention I now have guinea pigs as pets?
Yes, you've only said that for like 3 episodes already.
Hey, guinea pigs! Anyway, so Tekken Tag Tournament 2 for Wii U has a mode called Mushroom Battle, where you can grow larger or smaller, and each has its own advantages in play as you battle each other. There's also exclusive costume pieces to let you dress up like Mario or Link. Or probably there's a Waluigi in there somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, why not, right? And there is also the return exclusively to Wii U of Tekken Ball mode.
Oh, wow.
If you remember that mode from Tekken 3, you hit a volleyball back and forth, and you can power it up by smacking it more.
That's awesome.
The Wii U version also has all of the previously released time-release characters, such as Slim Bob and Dr. Boskanovich, and I believe it has all of the stages, including the Snoop Dogg stage.
and you know what else I was reading, too? It has all of the DLC costumes that were sold on the 360 and PS3 versions in the Wii U version. So it's got
the only DLC would have been the bikinis. They actually have never released costumes as DLC. What they have released, oddly... are they've released all of the soundtracks for the older Tekken games can be downloaded and integrated into the game. And then for some reason, you can also buy all of the intro and ending movies for all of the characters for Tekken's 1 through 6.
Huh.
Which is the weirdest DLC ever, because it's just
video.
Video that you can watch in the game. But if you're a completionist and you have OCD, they're there, I guess.
Well,
I
don't think that would be Ari over here.
I don't think the Wii U has those, but I got to ask you. So you've played Wii U, the Tekken Tag version on Wii U, and you've played it with the Wii U gamepad?
No, I bought it. I haven't played it yet. I just know what's in it. I bought it because I heard all the content is in it. And here's the mistake I made. I bought it digitally, and it I have a 32 gig. That game's 15 gigs, so I kind of fucked up there.
No. I mean, if you wanted to download it digitally, you do save $5 because it's 60 in retail. It's 55 online. So you didn't completely fuck up. And I mean, 15 gigs, yes, but it's 15 gigs digital download on other consoles as well. It's just that you have 32 gigs, and that's actually only 29 after you take out the 10% needed for the index file for the storage. So, I mean, really, you're not working with everything, but, you know, you can plug in a hard drive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'll do that. So, yeah, that's I've been kind of playing Mario, kind of digging that. And then I hope you guys don't mind this, but maybe in a future show I'd like to talk about. I told Alex about this. I bought that Hyrule Historia, the Zelda book. You guys heard of this?
Yeah, I got that, too.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what shocked me is the official timeline. I know it time split, but the way Nintendo time split it was not the way I expected.
Okay. I think we should just kind of glance over this because I think this is really interesting. Ari, Chris, have you guys actually seen the official timeline?
Yeah. No, I haven't.
How about you, Ted? Like, did you actually open it up and check it out?
I knew about the timeline ahead of time.
Yeah, so do you want to share with us, Anthony, what the official timeline actually says?
Yes.
Just glance over it.
Okay, so the timeline is linear right away, up to a certain game. So the linear timeline is Skyward Sword, which is the first game in the chronology. The second game in the chronology is the Minish Cap. The next game is Four Swords. And then the game after that is Ocarina of Time. Then at Ocarina of Time, the game splits into three timelines. Two of those timelines are two scenarios found in the game, Adult Link and Child Link. The Child Link era are Majora's Mask, Twilight Princess, Four Swords Adventures. The Adult Link era is The Wind Waker, Phantom Hourglass, and Spirit Tracks. Then there's a third scenario. The third scenario is if Link got killed by Ganon in Ocarina of Time. And this is the most interesting timeline. That timeline games are A Link to the Past, Oracle of Ages, and Oracle of Seasons, Link's Awakening, and then the final two games are the original The Legend of Zelda and Zelda 2 The Adventures of Link.
I was expecting more than a from you, Ari.
Well, I mean, I'm glad the timeline ends with my favorite Zelda game.
Oh, really? Zelda 2 is your favorite?
Yeah, I love Zelda 2.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Link to the Past was great too, but Zelda 2 is my favorite, yeah.
But was this a shock to anyone of you guys? I mean, you know.
Honestly, I didn't really find the need to worry about the chronology anyway. I don't feel like the storyline is all that worth looking into the timeline of.
Okay.
But since you guys are doing it, sure. Yay.
And of course, Chris, this doesn't sound like you're very kind of vocal about this either.
I heard it before. It was interesting back then. I didn't like the idea of a third, but it does make sense. So, I mean, I'll just leave it at that. I haven't played a Zelda game in a long time.
Yeah, that's why you need that Wii U. Anyways, how about you, Ted? Like, obviously you know about this already. Does this make sense to you?
Having played Skyward Sword, where they kind of say that this is a cycle that's going to continue forever and ever. It starts here, but it's never going to end. Yeah, it does make sense. And I guess it even does make sense that Ganon gets to win one, because that actually is a perfect tie-in to A Link to the Past.
That's true. So that's all like the revelation I guess we're going to be talking about as far as like, you know, Hyrule Historia is concerned, because that is a really awesome book. And how much is it again, Anthony?
$34.99. It's $34.99, and I got it.
I somehow thought that was $300. What the fuck was I thinking?
Oh, it's $34.99, and I think I paid $20 off of $20 off of Amazon for it.
And Amazon has it right now for a little over 20.
Oh, shit. Yeah. I need to fucking order that right now.
And you know what's cool about it is, other than the timeline, there's some really neat stuff. Like, they have concept art all the way back from the original Zelda, you know, and stuff like that. A lot of cool stuff.
I have to say, like, that was one of the first, like, pieces of artwork that I actually started drawing was actually Link, like, back in, you know, Zelda 1 era, Zelda 2 era also, so... But, you know, it's funny, like, looking back at that and seeing, like, the artwork for Link in Zelda 2, and he has, like, this big freaking, you know, like, thick nose or something like that. It's very different from, like, the Link that we know now.
And, you know, you'll get a kick out of this. Remember how they used to have, like, those little kind of, like, storybook pictures in the instruction manual?
Mm-hmm.
For those older Zelda games, Zelda 1, 2, and then Link to the Past. All those are back in the Hyrule Historia.
Oh, nice.
So it's really cool. It's just full of artwork. The only downfall I would say is the first section focuses a bit too much. Not saying Skyward Sword is bad. I love that game, but it focuses a little too much on Skyward Sword at the beginning. Mm. But the next two thirds of the book are fantastic though.
Okay. So that's cool. And yeah, this is published by Dark Horse, right?
Right, yeah, Dark Horse Comics.
Yeah, I actually got the art of Mass Effect from Dark Horse also, and if it's going to be the same thing, then I'm looking forward to, you know, getting my copy. Do you know if this is digital at all, or it's just hardbound?
There's only a hardbound version.
Okay. Yeah, only a hardbound, but it's a beautiful book, though.
Okay, all right, I'll probably get that then. So, all right, so that's pretty much everything you're playing, right, Anthony?
Yeah, I've been playing a little bit more, but I'll talk about some of that stuff next week. So,
okay, sounds good. So, Chris, I'm interested in what you think of Metal Gear Rising Revengeance. Tell us all about it.
It's different than the original Metal Gear because there's literally no sneaking.
Well, we covered that last week, but how is it different from the demo that you played, I suppose, I'm curious.
It's the same thing. They didn't change anything. They do teach you how to parry an attack, though, even though they never tell you how to do it in the demo.
Mm-hmm.
You just press the stick in the control of whoever, in the direction of whoever's attacking you,
mm-hmm.
and hit the attack button, and they'll parry the attack.
Oh, so you... Huh. That's kind of interesting.
Once they tell you how to do it, it's easy.
Oh, really? So there's, like, a big leeway as far as, like, you know, animation frames to parry is concerned?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because everybody, whenever they're going to attack, they pretty much load up, and so you know what's coming. Mm. It's just a matter of can you get around to doing it.
Okay. So, Ted, I have to ask, like, are you interested in this game? Do you have, like, any questions for Chris? Because obviously we talked about this last week, so I'm giving you an opportunity.
Having just watched a lot of footage of the game, it really seems like Platinum has basically have had Lightning Strike twice with Bayonetta and now this. It looks really smooth, but action aside, like, how do you find the story? Do you find it good or stupid or somewhere in the middle, or how do you feel about it?
It's so. I mean, Raiden's never been that very, very complicated or interesting, I think is a better word. So it's more of a less interesting character. And it's kind of hard to care about someone like that. The good news is he's not the same whiny character he once was. But in Metal Gear Solid 2, you know, they bring up Jack the Ripper. Now he actually takes on that persona.
Huh.
And just like in the Batman animated series or the movie with Kevin the cartoon with Kevin Conroy or the movie with, why can't I remember his name?
Is it Batman the Mask of the Phantasm?
No, it's just the character where, you know how Bruce Wayne changes his voice when he's Batman? Raiden does the same thing when he's Jack the Ripper. And it's terrible because it's a scraggly voice, Raiden.
That is weird.
That is odd. Yeah.
I don't know where to take that because that's like, you know, that's not something that I was expecting, you know, because
you're not. It just comes out of left field and it's like, that's the only thing I could equate to for him doing that. And there's really no purpose for it.
Okay. But I guess like to go back to that though, how's the story? Because I mean, as far as the, as far as the game is concerned, that is supposed to be a continuation of Metal Gear Solid 4 in a way.
Yeah, it is. It does continue. If you don't remember any of the terminology, because they like to use abbreviations for the different programs or whatever they were doing. So they bring up SOP a lot. And I don't even remember what that means anymore from Metal Gear Solid 4. So I'm going to have to go back and look up the that online guide that Sony let you download.
Oh, yeah, they had that Metal Gear, like, database and stuff. I remember that.
I'm going to have to go back and look at that to try and figure out what some of these acronyms mean.
Yeah. I wonder if they're going to keep that up to date.
They should.
I have a feeling they're not going to.
I got a question for Chris. I got a question about the game. Does any familiar characters show up in this other than Raiden?
No, not yet. You know, I'm waiting to see, but
I mean, how far are you into it right now?
I think I'm on chapter 4 maybe.
Okay.
But I'm 6 hours in.
Wow.
And thing is, you know how when you reserve something, they give you some little piece of DLC? Well, if you reserve from GameStop, they give you the skin from Metal Gear Solid 2 for what was it?
For the ninja.
Right, yeah, the ninja. Mm-hmm. The only difference is they colored it, so it's blue and yellow, which is really tacky. And they make you purchase it. So you get these battle points every time you pull off certain moves. And you have to buy different things. You have to buy upgrades for your weapon, upgraded moves, health, and whatever. And they make you actually buy that suit.
So, okay, so let's backtrack here. How do you get, like, battle points? Is that just kind of, like, style points and stuff like that? And the better your combos and, you know, the less damage you take, like, the more battle points you get? Is that how it works?
Sort of. You get battle points whenever you kill somebody. You just don't get as many. You get some for dicing people in half. You get the most, like, in the demo, the guy tells you he wants left arms or left hands. You get the most if you can chop off a left hand properly. You also get battle points by...
that sounds kind of funny, actually.
Yeah. Well, just the main focus of the game is slicing things and people in half, so...
Really?
Yeah, that's the main focus of the game.
Can you still... I remember some of the early demos from that older build, that old build. Could you still slice watermelons? I had to ask. I'm sorry.
Yeah, they were actually there in the demo. In a VR mission, they're in a demo in that demo VR mission.
Mm-hmm.
So you see them in there. I haven't seen them in the game yet.
Okay.
I want to slice some watermelons.
You're not selling us on the game, though. It seems like, oh, look, it's another, like, you know, stylistic action game. Where have I heard of that before?
That's what it is. It's Ninja Gaiden without the Ryu Hayabusa. And you can cut anything in half.
How's the difficulty?
I'm playing on hard. There's only 3 difficulties, easy, medium, and hard. And I was contemplating what to do for the review.
You unlock very hard and Revengeance after you beat the game. So there's actually 5.
Yeah, so I'm just playing on hard right now. It's not too bad. It's a little tough when you're doing the boss fights.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I'm not having too many problems with it.
I mean, how would you compare the combo system then with that game and, like, Devil May Cry? Because obviously you played my copy of DMC Devil May Cry. Like, how is the gameplay and stuff? Like, I know I played the demo and stuff like that, but it's like...
It's not that in-depth. It's not that in-depth, the combo system. I mean, all you really do is go and run around and hit things. They only start counting once you start cutting things in half.
So are you just mashing buttons all the time?
Pretty much.
Oh.
I mean, you got your 2 attack buttons, your square and triangle. Square is normal attack and triangle is the heavy attack.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't, like I said, they don't count combo strikes at all.
So there's nothing that's, you know, so far that's making it stand out as like, oh, yeah, you should play this game kind of thing.
Not unless you want to play as Raiden.
I mean, I got to ask Chris something real quick.
Yeah.
Okay, Metal Gear, I know this was not developed by the typical Metal Gear team, Kojima's team, obviously. This was developed by Platinum. But
they started.
But here's the thing that I want to ask you is, the Metal Gear games in general are known for very good and unique boss fights. Did they... did they make their boss fights unique or at least fun at the very least?
Yeah. Yeah, the last boss I fought literally splits himself in different pieces. So you can hit on him at first, but then once you start taking, he starts taking too much damage. As soon as you start attacking him, your sword just passes right through him because he splits that section in half. So you gotta basically wear him down.
So they're basically a bunch of creative bosses then. So.
Yeah, it's always been like that, and you gotta figure out their pattern, what they do, when to attack, stuff like that. It's a lot of trial and error.
Okay.
It always has been.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess, you know, there's something to look forward to as far as your review is concerned and stuff. Like, I'm kind of curious as to how this is going to turn out, because from what it sounds like, from what you're saying, you're not too sold on the game.
I'm a little, I don't want to say disappointed, because I'm not disappointed with it. I am intrigued with it. And I do want to get to the end of the game to see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, it is canon to the Metal Gear Saga, so I'm kind of curious, yeah. Your thoughts about that.
I can kind of see where the story's going with it, with the whole cyborgs and everything.
Mm-hmm.
That they're kind of pushing in a direction of AI.
Yeah, because, you know, he's working for a cyborg PMC, right? That's the kind of like the story.
Well, PMC, and he's a cyborg.
Oh, okay.
But cyborg technology is just spread rapidly. So,
okay. You know,
that's the thing.
Okay. All right. So I guess it's something to look forward to as far as your review is concerned. So I'm definitely looking forward to, you know, hearing like what you have to say about that.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to finishing it.
Yeah. So Ari, you've finished Fire Emblem.
Yes. Finally. I did finish Fire Emblem, and I did so on the fucking casual setting.
Aww.
But for what it's worth, I really enjoyed the game. It has a pretty good storyline, but it has better characters. And there's an interesting method of getting to know the characters in the game. Basically, if they fight alongside each other in battle, then they can unlock these support conversations. And the support conversations just really let the characters like get to know each other a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I mentioned this last week, but in the case of a male and a female character, they can get married.
Yeah.
And later in the game, you can actually recruit their kid into the army.
Oh.
So that actually unlocks additional support conversations. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, and it adds replay value, because each time you play the game, you'll hook up different people and have more to learn about the characters.
Yeah.
So, that in that way, the game is really really, really successful.
Yeah. I do have a question about that, though, because, like, you know, my vision of this game is that, you know, like, I know some characters are really important and really integral and stuff like that, but it seems like, you know, when you have like an offspring or something like that, and you said last week that you could basically pair up some really, you know, like people who can't even stand each other and force them to marry each other and stuff like that, and yeah, they'll have an offspring. Is the offspring have like as much of a detailed backstory as like the main characters, or they're just kind of filler? And
the offspring cannot get S rank conversations, which means they can't get married.
Okay.
But so typically those characters will have support conversations with their parents and with the other younger generation.
Mm, okay.
So
it's not exactly
but I wouldn't say they're less developed characters, because there's really a lot to learn about any character in the game, and it would take a lot of playthroughs to see it all.
Mm-hmm. Because that's one thing that I was like really curious about the game, is how the character development is, because typically in like SRPGs and stuff, you're kind of, you know, you kind of have like these troops to play with who just are there as like bodies to fill your roster, you know? And I've always been kind of curious as to how far they would go in something like Fire Emblem to really establish that these characters have their own personalities, they have their own backstories, and you should probably check them out. Like, as far as
it's really up to the player. Mm-hmm. In Fire Emblem Awakening, if the player wants to learn more about a character, they can use that character in battle, get them to get to know the other characters and start finding out about their storylines and how they interact with each other. And through that, the characters are just developed in amazing ways. I mean, I really cared about the characters in this game, even the less significant ones that I rarely even brought onto the battlefield I cared about. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, like I said last week, if you're playing on classic mode, you can get a character who dies the same fight you get them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's it. They're out of the game. For characters that have essential parts in the storyline, if they are mortally wounded in battle, they are basically retired instead of killed.
So you can't
use them anymore, but they're still there for the purpose of the storyline when they need to be.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I'm still really interested in this game because it's like, you know, and I've already stressed how many times that I don't dislike the strategy RPG genre, but this seems to be like more up my alley, just if only because of the character development. I'm just hoping that normal classic will be much more forgiving, I guess. than
classic
hard,
normal
casual.
Will be a cakewalk. You will have absolutely no problem. None of your characters can die at all. And all you have to do is keep basically the player-made character and the prince, Crom, alive.
Okay.
As long as neither of those two characters dies, you're fine. Mm-hmm. And it's unlikely you'll get wiped out.
Yeah. So, Ted, I wanted to ask, like, were you going to pick up, like, Fire Emblem? If that's the case, like, do you have any questions for Ari?
I keep thinking about it, and then I don't do it, and then I keep thinking about it, and I think about my poor backlog. So right now, I'm not thinking about picking it up, but I tell everyone at Street Pass Los Angeles has gotten that game, but I'm not playing it right now.
Okay.
I want to, but then I have pre-ordered something else for the 3DS, so that will Fire Emblem is just going to have to wait.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, a funny thing about Fire Emblem is that the game has a little bit of voice acting for the most important scenes,
mm-hmm.
but there's all these little phrases that the characters say during the text-based dialogue.
Mm.
So, like, you'll be reading along, and then they'll be like, huh? Huh? Yes. Okay. but it's never, it almost never matches what you're actually reading. So if you're playing in English, you're basically hearing something that's completely unrelated to what you're reading. And in one case, one of my characters was proposing to another character, right? The text said, "I'm in love with you." And the audio that played was, "Now I'm angry."
What the fuck?
Yeah. I mean, it was so fucking weird. So, I mean, I'm glad I played in Japanese. I mean, it still does that in Japanese, and I know enough Japanese to be aware that it doesn't make any sense compared to what I'm reading. But for people that don't know any Japanese, I suggest you play it in Japanese so that the weird voices don't distract you throughout the whole damn game.
I got a couple things to say. I bought me a 16-gig card for my 3DS, transferred all my data, bunch of games digitally because I still can't find Fire Emblem, and I bought Fire Emblem digitally. So I got So I've got, you know, like, I got a bunch of, you know, 3DS games now on one card. So it's kind of like on par with my Vita, which is nice.
Okay.
So I bought that one. And now I got one question, one statement, really. One game that I've adored over the last few years is Fire Emblem Shadow Dragon, which was on the DS, and it was a remake of the very original, you know, Fire Emblem. And I can see where, you know, where a lot of the character development comes from, because that game even developed very minor characters, you know? But the thing was that game was pretty difficult because you could not shut permadeath off at all in that. So there was that. And then the whole marriage thing, you know what it kind of reminds me of? And I, Alex, you might get a little happy for me for mentioning this. Phantasy Star 3, Generations of Doom.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah, kind of reminds me of that a little bit.
But the thing is, like, with Generations of Doom and stuff like that, they actually, you know, your offspring actually continues on and actually has their own story. It seems like...
Yeah, they become the new main character.
Right.
I don't think you still have the other party members. In this game, you actually have a whole army of parents and their kids.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's quite the visual.
A ton of characters. I mean, it gives Chrono Cross a run for its money. I mean,
oh, geez.
Not only are all the characters that are in the default game, but you can also unlock all these characters from previous Fire Emblem games. I mean, they don't have the support conversations, but they can be added to your army. And as far as the challenge is concerned, even without permadeath, the game does manage to get pretty difficult, especially if you're on the harder difficulty settings.
Mm-hmm.
The game has a really bad habit of sending waves of reinforcements after you, but not really giving you any warning that they're about to show up. And it, basically, it's the enemy's turn, right? They show up, and they immediately start attacking.
What?
But, yeah, so if you've got, like, your little healer minding her own business, and, you know, one of these waves shows up and one-shots her, if you're playing on Classic, that's a basically, all right, start that fight over. At least next time, I know there's some reinforcements coming.
I know, right?
Yeah, so, I mean... Beyond that, the waves of enemies just get bigger and bigger, and by the end of the game, you're literally fighting like 40 or 50 enemies.
So do you kind of feel that that's kind of cheap, though, in such a way? Because, I mean, I would imagine that, I mean, I'm sure that, of course, like, when reinforcements happen and stuff, it might be pretty surprising to you, and maybe, you know, it's a way to add challenge to it, but doesn't feel cheap in a way that you're like, well, fuck, like, you know, I prepared for this battle this particular way, it's as if, like, I have to telepathically know that they're going to show up in this particular manner.
Fire Emblem does not play fair at all.
Okay.
It will kill you in the worst possible way. So if you're playing on Classic, be ready for it.
Oh, fuck.
That's all I got to say. I mean, it is not an easy game. And, what ended up happening to me was I had three or four characters that ended up being on the front lines all the time. And one of them had an incredibly high defense rating. Mm-hmm. It was actually the character that I missed when I was playing on Classic, Kellum, which is actually ironic considering Kellum's gimmick is that nobody ever notices him. Yeah. Well, anyway.
That's awesome.
So he ended up being my single strongest character on my second playthrough on Casual. And by the end of the game, I mean, entire waves of reinforcements were appearing right next to him, right? And they would all rush at him because he was the only one within range, and he would kill them all and not take a single point of damage. So defense was an incredibly important statistic and basically turned Kellum into a one-man army. And then there was other characters that had really high speed stats, so they were actually able to just dodge all the enemy attacks.
Oh, wow.
Enemies would just miss. So what you end up doing is... basically, your weak characters you don't put anywhere near the enemies, and you end up throwing like two or three really strong characters on the front lines and let them do all the work. So, honestly, I'm a little disappointed that that's what the strategy boils down to, or at least that's what it did for me. Mm-hmm. But it didn't stop me from enjoying the game as a whole.
Yeah. In Shadow Dragon, that kind of reminds me, it did this weird thing where I remember there was this one character and she was really, like, her attacks were really powerful, but she was, like, physically weak. And what would happen is, you know, she would kick ass, but then enemies would somehow, like, surround her, and then she would die, and then I would restart my game because, you know, I liked having her around. So
yeah, that's it. Like, there were a bunch of characters I really wanted to use. But had I been playing on Classic, they would have been dead a million times. I mean, it was okay on Casual because they could just die and be back the next fight. And you know, I kept bringing, you know, a full array of characters with me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in nearly every fight I would lose a couple, but, you know, on Casual it doesn't matter. But I kept thinking to myself, holy shit, if I was playing on Classic right now, oh man, I'd still be like, I wouldn't even be halfway through the game yet.
Oh gosh. Well, obviously, like, you know, people can check out your review on the website. I'm looking forward to actually, like, reading it because I haven't actually had the chance to, like, read it and stuff because, obviously, like, I've been looking forward to actually playing this game for quite a while just because of the character development and whatnot and just the effects of, you know, like, actually playing the game with permadeath and stuff. Like, I never really considered that that might have a possible emotional impact, you know, when you're actually, you know, seeing, like, a character that you've spent so many hours trying to level up, like, actually die in one hit. So,
well, you should look forward to it because it is a great game and I do recommend it.
Okay. So, anyways, so I guess it's my turn to tell you guys what I've been playing, which is... that's exactly what I've been playing. So, anyways, let's move on to the next subject.
That was exciting.
Indeed, best game ever!
Woo!
I learned a lot.
So, oh my god, so finally, oh my god, guys, PlayStation Meeting, oh my god, it's done.
PlayStation 4!
Holiday 2013, what the fuck? That blew my mind. I mean, Okay.
It was incredibly vague.
I know, right? It's so crazy. So I want to start this is I want to kind of, you know, get your guys' overall opinion of, like, what you guys saw, and then after that, we're going to start drilling into, like, each of the specific details that they've announced, which, by the way, is 2 fucking hours worth of goddamn content. That is a shit ton of information to be putting out for this thing. So, and they haven't even, like, shown, like, the actual console yet and the price. So
seriously, where was the hardware reveal?
Well, yeah. They just did. It just didn't show the box.
I was waiting for it, and I was waiting for it, and then it didn't happen.
Oh,
I was hoping it was going to happen at the end.
We saw the controller.
Yeah.
The controller looks a little bit better than it did in some of the leaked prototypes. There's a little bit of a refinement to it, but all the features are there.
Pretty much. So let's start with you, Ted. So what do you think of the whole overall presentation and whatnot?
Well, not seeing the console aside, I can tell you my first reaction on seeing actual footage, which was Killzone Shadowfall, was, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. What? And then something happened during that demo. He pulled out a gun and started moving around, and I realized, wait a minute, it's Killzone. Not the biggest franchise out there, as much as they have aspirations to be.
Mm-hmm.
But it looked great, and then the use of color was great, and then it's like, oh, browns and grays.
We're back to that. are you underwhelmed then? Are you, like, you know?
Some of the things they announced are a lot bigger than they seem. For example, they announced that you will be able to join a friend's game and play for them.
Yeah,
that happened. I want to reiterate, that happened.
Mm-hmm.
So, as a fighting game fan, that has amazing repercussions. Like, if you're in training mode, you're trying to learn to do something, someone can jump in your game and show you and then say, okay, now you try. Yeah, that's the other thing. It probably is going to be used for trophy boosting. I'm worried about the trophy boosting, but, I mean, maybe there'll be some kind of solution where you can't get trophies if you're playing for someone else. The other thing that's big was they announced all of the Gaikai-based streaming. Good news, demos are instant. That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's instant gratification. If I want to try a game, I'm just going to try it out. Cool, great, awesome.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm worried about is, okay, and then we're going to do backwards compatibility using Gaikai, which means, okay, are my physical discs screwed? Yeah, probably. Maybe all my PSN purchases are going to work. But the other thing is, what's the latency going to be like? I've played on live, and I wasn't happy with the latency. Is this going to be better? Couldn't tell you. I don't know. Mm-hmm. We're just going to have to wait and see.
Yeah. So anyways, so that's a pretty interesting assessment, because, I mean, I think those are all valid points. So anyways, Chris, what did you think of the whole conference in general?
I liked it. I thought it was interesting. There was a couple things that got my attention. What was it, the first one?
You completely forgot already? It is so overwhelmingly good that you completely forgot the whole conference already.
It blew his mind, literally.
Admittedly, there was a lot they covered. Do you remember the Capcom game?
Yep.
Yeah.
Dragon's Dogma 2? No, I'm kidding.
Deep Down.
Whoa. Deep Down. What? Yeah. Don't make a game that looks like the game you just released.
Well, one of the things that got me was with their profile that they're going to be, I guess, tracking all your purchases like they normally do. But they're going to try and predict what you might buy and, I guess, download it to your console. So all you have to do is purchase it.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of got my attention in that if they start doing that, how soon before they start taking money out of your wallet?
Oh, geez. So you and your conspiracy theories. It's not going to happen.
Tinfoilhat.com.
So how?
But one thing they also revealed is that you'll be able to play games while you download. That's kind of neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
Yeah. So how about you, Ari? What do you think? Like, I mean, obviously you're like a predominant PC gamer these days. What do you think of this?
But, you know, I've got a lifetime of console game playing. You know, Sony's really good at throwing these big press conferences and getting us all excited. And they did it again, as far as I'm concerned. PS4 looks amazing. The visuals are obviously a new standard, as far as I can tell, from a somewhat unreliable stream.
I know, right?
as far as the backwards compatibility is concerned, they did say that they want you to be able to play basically all of the old PlayStation products going all the way back to PS1. Though then again, Cliff Bleszinski just tweeted, no one cares about backwards compatibility. They say they do, but they seldom use it. So I don't know. I thought about that, and it occurred to me, you know, I rarely do actually use backwards compatibility at all, as much as I love to bitch about it.
Well, let me make a point on that, because they actually Microsoft actually did something really smart in the past, where, you know, they tried to make a study on how I guess they made a study on what if we just released a version of Word with just stripped features, basic functionality and whatnot. And the results were, it's a terrible flop. Apparently, people would rather buy Microsoft Word with all the bells and whistles, stuff they would never use their entire life, just because it you know, there's a perceived value to it. So, I mean, he has a point there, but he also obviously, you know, doesn't take into account that people just want certain things there just in case, quote unquote, they'd use it. So,
well, I mean, I'm kind of skeptical anyway, because like Ted mentioned, I mean, this is probably not going to be compatible with the old discs. It's mm-hmm. just all going to be digital content, which means we'll have to rebuy everything, I think.
Yeah.
Unless they have some way of like turning a physical copy of a game into a digital license.
Well, no, they do not have that. They do have that in Japan for PSP games, but I don't think you're going to be seeing that in America. I don't think they have the infrastructure for it. I don't think we're really going to see it.
And they'd rather you just buy it again.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's that whole feeling of just in case. Admittedly, I have two Vita memory cards. I try to have every single piece of digital content I own available on a memory card because what if I feel like playing it?
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is, I don't change my memory cards that often on the Vita.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, and it's also, I mean, it's a really hard feeling to explain, but I mean, I don't want to have multiple consoles hooked up.
The fewer consoles into the TV, the better.
Yeah.
Yeah, my Wii is still hooked up to my TV, mainly for the GameCube compatibility. That's primarily because I'm not going to be able to go out and get a GameCube and get component cables, because those are rare.
Mm-hmm.
But I wish I could get rid of it.
Yeah. So, but yeah.
If that makes any sense to anyone.
Oh, yeah, it does. Totally does. But, yeah. Anyways, getting a little bit long in the tooth on this. Anthony, what do you think of the whole, you know, PlayStation meeting and whatnot?
Well, here's the good news. There was no Ridge Racers, realistic, historic Japanese battles with giant crabs and massive damage. So that was the good news. You know, there's none of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm being sarcastic here, of course, but the good news was we got a lot of interesting games. I do have to say, though, in some instances, I would have liked to see some, you know, actual gameplay in some of the footage, you know, some
Square Enix.
Yeah, Square Enix. You know, and
I wonder
how
many people thought that was actually a game.
That's that tech demo they showed, yeah. What was it, last year?
Yeah, that was my response. Why I was like, I even commented. I was like, that was last year's tech demo from E3 2012. And then they were like, oh, it's new. I'm like, you fucking showed it last year. Mm. Dear Lord. But aside from that, though, I think, you know, there's a lot of great stuff. I think one of the demos that really, you know, impressed me the most was the Watch Dogs demo. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we got to see more of that game. And the more I see of this game, you know, the more I want it. It looks like it has a very cinematic flair. It, you know, it moves very smoothly, you know, and the plot just seems very intriguing from what we're gathering of it. So Watch Dogs is definitely one of those games to keep an eye out for. So,
yeah, I'm looking forward to that a lot. It's actually probably my most anticipated next-gen game out of all of them.
I agree. I think Watch Dogs is up there. And then I saw that I forgot what was it, the guy, I always forget his name, Cerny, the one that's developing the
Mark Cerny.
Yeah, Mark Cerny, his game Knack, was it?
Mm-hmm.
yeah
I'm kind of interested in that, because that looks like a very kind of classic whimsical game, and it looks like it has a lot of story to it too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that one looks interesting as well. I think
I'd kind of rather have another Marble Madness.
Oh, God.
I don't know about that, but I will say that I do think Knack looks pretty cool. It looks like a lot of fun. As for Killzone, that looks good, but, you know, let's hope it's not a Killzone 2 situation again. And then I'm trying to think what else we had on the demo.
Well, don't, like, go through the entire fucking
thing. No.
Like,
I'm trying to think of something else.
Vita.
Drive Club.
I got to tell you, I was listening to the explanation for Drive Club. It's like, wow, this guy is making this sound real boring.
I know, right?
Now, Drive Club, you're mentioning before, Alex, this is like a game that's been in development for 10 years.
Yes.
Well, it's a racing game?
Well, it's not that it's necessarily in development, but it's a game that they've been in pre-production, like trying to find the conceptual stuff, like for the past 10 years. This is literally their pet project.
How hard is it to make the cars go down the road? Am I missing something here? No, well,
they've put like incredible detail into the vehicles, but it's don't they still always put just a racing game, isn't it?
Yeah, you look at Gran Turismo, it's like some of our cars are sexy, but not all of them. And I think that's also the way it is in Forza.
I know, so, you've got your like real enthusiasts that are going to actually take the time to like use the photo mode and like take pictures of the car while doing I don't know what. But putting that aside, it's still just a racing game, right?
Yeah. Well, okay, so obviously we're already talking about the different parts of this fucking thing, but let's just start with the most basic stuff. Like the biggest thing that a lot of people have been telling me that the PlayStation 4 has, and I am completely out of the loop when it comes to, like, you know, PC hardware architecture, so if any of you guys can pretty much like give me a 411 on this, that would be awesome, is the 8 gigabytes of GDDR5 RAM that's in it. Why is this a big deal? Who wants to say?
Because GDDR5 RAM is really fast.
Because the PS3 didn't have nearly enough RAM at all.
I mean, admittedly, my computer has 12 gigs of RAM right now, but...
But why... What is the big deal with GDDR5? Why is it better than your RAM, I suppose, is what I'm trying to figure this out. Like, why is this such a big deal?
DDR5 is a higher number than DDR3.
I think it's just faster.
In all seriousness, it's got a... Yeah, it's got a faster transfer rate. It's got a bigger channel. I mean, it's good RAM. So that's 8 gigs of really high quality memory that you're going to have really good access to.
Okay, so that's pretty interesting. I mean, I think Ari was also right in saying, like, yeah, there's not a lot of RAM on the PS3 because that's shared RAM, and I think they said that this was dedicated RAM, right? Yeah.
Well, this is RAM. There's enough RAM to put a game into a suspend state and then resume it later. So that's
another feature. That's another feature we should talk about.
That was
about.
Interesting.
You know, the fact that you can actually suspend a game just like the Vita and come back to it exactly the way that it was. Like,
for a console, that's a great achievement.
An underrated feature on the Vita. 3DS does that to an extent as well. It's just a fantastic feature, and it's not something you really think about till you have it or you don't have it and you're used to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but why should you have to spend 3 to 5 minutes, like, turning a game on?
Exactly.
At PlayStation 3, you got your old boot up menu, then you got to find the game, then you start the game, and there's a bunch of logos, a bunch of, who knows, I mean, literally 3 or 5 minutes just to get into a game.
Yeah.
But PS4, press a button, you're right back where you were. Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing.
And all of this kind of, like, you know, like specs and all that stuff was actually shared by Mark Cerny, who I've shared, I don't know if you guys actually, you know, listeners out there actually went to the Gamer Horizon website to see it. We were actually sharing a bunch of information about the people who were talking. Mark Cerny is responsible for designing Marble Madness. Great game.
I love that game.
Yeah. And he's also actually responsible for a lot of the characterization and the gameplay for a lot of the PlayStation library of characters, such as, not anymore, Crash Bandicoot, you know, Jack and Daxter, and Ratchet and Clank. So, you know, that's why I got really excited about Knack, because, like, this is basically Cerny doing what Cerny does best. And let's backtrack here. He was announced as the lead hardware architect for this fucking platform. Two things came in mind. One, it is a developer that's making the platform. Two, it's not a Japanese dude. I mean, did that occur to you guys? That the fact that that's like some of the biggest things that just that revealed was like, holy Jesus Christ, like a fucking American guy is actually working on this goddamn platform. So it's actually going to be modern for once.
Yeah, I can see that, you know, the problem with the PS3 that from what I've heard, and I guess, I don't know if it's so much a problem now, but early on in its life cycle was it was just hard to develop for.
Yeah, that's a key feature of the PlayStation 4. Actually, part of why that is important, it's just going to be so much easier for the developers to actually make games.
Mm-hmm. And one thing that they touted too that was really interesting is, and they made this a key point in Mark Cerny's like speech, is that it there's an ease of portability from PCs to the PlayStation 4, which I felt was one of the most difficult things to do coming from, you know, like in this generation, like people
great.
Trying to
maybe port- the next Skyrim game won't have a console as the lead platform.
I know, right?
Elder Scrolls.
But you don't like your backwards flying dragons?
I don't know. It's just to this day, there are still like problems in the PC version of Skyrim that are or can be traced to their console roots.
To be honest,
Skyrim,
to
Fallout 3.
Game killing glitches. Okay, anyway.
To be honest, though, I mean, like that engine in general, like, that Bethesda's doing, even without a console version, it's still going to be fucking borked. I'm sorry. You know? I mean, look.
Well, the fans will fix it, you know.
Yeah, exactly, right? Leave the fans to fix the fucking game for us. So, speaking of which, another thing that I found interesting was the sharing capability. Now, I'm assuming that you guys, like Ari, Ted, Chris, you've never listened to the podcast last year, but I know I've talked to Ted enough times to know that I talked about one of the best features that any fucking console can have. I'm not talking about sharing, but the fact that you can spectate on your friends' games so that you can actually check out how the game is and stuff like that. I mean, to me, when I was suggesting it on the Game Horizon podcast last year, I was merely coming from a standpoint of, well, wouldn't it be cool to actually check out your friends playing the game in order for you to decide whether or not you want to buy the game? So, like, let's say Chris is playing Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, and I want to kind of peep into his game and stuff and be like, hey, how is this game? And it'll be like, well, check this out, and he can actually check it out. And
like Ted was saying before, that ties into the whole subject of another player being able to actually play the game that you have. And even beyond that, there's another connection, which is to the second screen feature that the PlayStation Vita is going to be, and also cell phones and all that, are going to be able to act as second screens for your PlayStation 4. I think the same technology is driving all of those features.
I think there's a reason why Gaikai was basically bought, and this whole... Because we've seen like the PlayStation 4 meeting and stuff like that, like it's now coming together, like how everything is gonna work. And you know, and again, like going back to like that one feature that I wanted, I was so stoked when I fucking announced it. I was like, yes, because I mean, you know, like it's an easy way to fucking sell a game. Watch somebody play it. Fucking people do it on YouTube all the time with Let's Plays. Why not fucking you know do it on the PlayStation 4?
And I think you're gonna see a lot of people like all the. In competitive gaming, oh, hey, I'm going to stream on my PlayStation 3. It's like, oh, wow, I'm going to watch you. And I don't even need my PlayStation 3 or 4. I'm sorry, PlayStation 4 to watch him. I can watch him on my Vita or my phone or my PC. I'm like, wow, Twitch actually has some competition now, and that's going to be really interesting.
And they're making it really easy to actually publish your videos to YouTube or wherever, and the system's going to be recording mm-hmm. like the last 5 minutes of your gameplay, so you can easily make a video.
If you go to the... Killzone Facebook page, the video they actually played is shared on their Facebook page.
Mm-hmm. That is incredible, guys. Like, I mean, this is the thing that basically blew my mind the most, I think, out of this entire conference, is that they have a dedicated chipset for specific background activities. Background processing, for that matter. I mean, holy shit.
Do you get the feeling, though, that some of the developers are going to try to tap into that for their, you know, for their maxing of the system?
Well, the thing is, it's interesting is that what they've talked about is the GPU was still so underutilized that, you know, they weren't like a lot of the tech demos that they used was pretty much like, you know, we're using only a fraction of like the GPU's like processing capabilities. And that wasn't even using like the main processor. And that tripped me out. Like the whole, you know, when they dropped all those balls in that like mm-hmm. kind of highly detailed environment and stuff. Like, I can't believe that they were only just using the GPU and not even the CPU on that. I was like,
wasn't that like a million separate objects all being like simulated in real time physics?
In Havoc physics, yeah.
Yeah.
That is fucking insane. Cool. Ah, man. It's so total geek out. But in any case, so I guess we kind of already went through it. But I mean, who wants to kind of talk about like, you know, like what their favorite parts are and the whole thing? Because I mean, it's kind of redundant, but. Go ahead, Anthony.
Okay, I got one. This kind of was neat. we haven't talked about it much, but they talked about a feature called the director's chair. And
what is it? Is it just like the editing suite that they have?
You know what it reminds me of, and this is what I compared it to was, and I could be completely wrong, but as you know, I'm a big fan to this day of Neverwinter Nights, which had the DM client, the Dungeon Master client. And it kind of reminded me of that in some ways, but I don't know how exactly it's going to work.
The director's chair is where you play someone's game for them.
I thought it was something like where you could throw, like, you know, enemies at them or something like that. That's what
no,
I got.
No, yeah. That is not
no,
what it is.
No.
Okay.
Well, they mentioned something like that where you can leave health buffs.
Yeah, that's what people. I was thinking about.
That was like, wasn't that Media Molecules game? That doesn't sound like the director's.
No, they, Sony mentioned that developer willing that you'd be able to leave like certain health buffs for other players.
Yeah, that's what I was getting.
Can somebody confirm that? Because like, I want to know if that's actually true. Because that's like, that sounds really weird. Like from a, like
I do remember them mentioning that.
Well, it was all part of the same thing. You can play a game for someone, you know, if they're having a tough time, you can also, you know, they said you'd be able to leave health buffs or anything like that there.
Yeah, can I go check real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
Reminds me of Super Mario Galaxy with the second player could help the first player.
Mm-hmm. Well, help, quote unquote, if they're not fucking around with their jumps and shit.
Right.
I don't know. It's just really weird. But I know Ted, you're talking like earlier about like the ramifications of being able to like, you know, play somebody's game for them and stuff. Like, do you want to elaborate on that? Because we had like a little bit of a discussion on it.
Well, like if you were playing a fighting game and you want to show someone something, you can do it in their game. And I mean, it's not as good as like showing them how to do it on the controller, but it's very, very close to that. It's going to be a very useful learning tool for a lot of people out there,
especially in those practice modes where they actually show you the key inputs on screen.
Oh yeah, this is going to change online. This is going to change fighting game training mode forever, because training modes now, it's going to be online. It's going to be a social thing that you're going to be able to do.
And it's funny considering that we're considering right now our current, like, you know, online infrastructure and gaming as social. I mean, one of the things that really struck me that they described like really carefully was the fact that what they're trying to mimic with the online experience is a next to each other couch experience, which I felt like was like the one thing that was missing from online, is the fact that even though you're playing against somebody online or with somebody online, you never really truly feel that they're physically there. It's either you're a teammate or something, or you're doing co-op, but not really present in other ways. Like if I played like a single player game and stuff, my friend can't really, you know, jump in and help me out or something, or kind of hang out, or, you know, that sort of thing. So
I know what you mean, because like I've been playing Diablo 3 with my brother, and he was in town for a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And we just had a blast when we were both here and kind of doing the LAN party thing minus the LAN. Mm-hmm. But now that he's back in Frisco, mm-hmm. it's not quite the same when we play. I mean, we're on headsets and everything, but it's not the same experience.
Exactly. Speaking of Diablo
3.
Oh, yes. That's a good segue. So PS4 and PS3 versions of the game.
Yeah.
Does that mean it's only going to be on PlayStation 3 and not Xbox?
Who knows? But, you know,
that's a big get. That's a very, very big get. Blizzard showing up, one of the last companies you'd ever expect for a console launch. Like, hey, guess what? And there it is.
Yeah, but, you know, at the same time, some of the Diablo 3 fans are kind of up in arms right now. Because they're like, okay, you guys were planning this all along. This was going to be a console game from the very beginning. And that's why this sucks. And that's why that sucks.
Mm.
I mean, there's a lot of people that are pissed off feeling like the entire game was never supposed to be a PC game. And that's why there's only like 4 hotkeys on the action bar and, you know, perfect for 4 buttons on a controller.
People whine about anything.
But yeah. Blizzard said that they might come out on console a long time ago.
They did.
Also, their community is just, you know, they'll get up in arms about anything.
Pretty
mean,
much,
seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, it's only because
the world's,
I mean, the more
light.
Passionate the community, it's not the more likely they are to just complain and complain.
Yeah, exactly what Chris said. Like, oh, the world's too, you know, too light.
Too colorful.
Yeah, the world's too colorful. There are only 4 hotkeys on there. I can't do anything. Blizzard, you suck.
Foreign land.
Yeah, I know, right? But Now my curiosity is, are you going to be able to crossplay between PS3 and PS4?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Well, considering there are some games that are crossplay between PSP and Vita, you might see it for PS3 and PS4, but I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah. And
have real money auction house.
Maybe, who knows?
Oh, wow, that's a good one.
Yeah. Here's another thing too that I kind of, you know, just thought of right now. Sony wants to have pretty much all of their PlayStation 4 games, you know, with remote play on the PlayStation Vita. Is this going to be one of those games? I mean, portable Diablo seems pretty interesting to me.
I think what they were implying is that you're basically going to get an instantaneous video stream of whatever game is on the PS4. So literally any PS4 game or any even a video can be viewed using the second screen feature on the Vita or on a cell phone or a tablet.
I mean, you know, at this point, like, to be honest, the Vita pretty much has all the functionality of the PlayStation DualShock 4 controller at this point. So the most interesting part about that, the whole conversation, though, is the fact that, you know, what this reminded me of like the whole remote play feature in a way, with the PlayStation 4 acting as a server and the Vita being like the client. You know, I mean, obviously they've been doing this for a long time, but with Gaikai, it's almost kind of like they want to have something like a Steam box or something where you can literally play your games wherever you want and you're, you know, within a certain vicinity, I'd imagine, because of latency. But that was the first thing came into my mind. I'm like, Steam box. Interesting. Yeah.
About the director's chair real quick. I've been looking for information on it. It looks like the only information I have is on the video, and the only video I can find is continuous live streams that I can't rewind or go back and forth on at this point. So I even checked YouTube for, like, you know,
so
a
you
full
got
length
nothing.
Video.
Okay.
So you got,
got nothing yet. Not yet. But once it's up, I will talk about it next week.
Stop making things up.
What did you guys think of the media molecule sculpting program and that whole music app and their whole attempt to, like, revive the PS Move?
That actually looked really cool. What? But no, it did. But it'll change once people start, you know, drawing penises in the game.
I thought that's what they were
floating it out
on
the internet.
The time to penis in that game will be instant.
That, you know what? That's just as disturbing when Xbox 360 came out with that camera and you would play Uno and you would see a bunch of random penises. Yeah, that's just as bad.
Any particular game that has stood out? I mean, obviously we talked a little bit about, you know, Knack. We talked a little bit about, you know, Watch Dogs. You guys want to bring anything else up?
Infamous Second Son.
Oh, yeah.
Really cool.
A little underwhelmed by that, though. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I don't know how much gameplay we saw, but it was a cool trailer.
I mean, in general, that whole, you know what struck me, one of the things that struck me with this meeting is that, and yes, that's another drinking game. Every time I say the word struck, the fact that they made a conscious effort as a company to show gameplay, that real life gameplay demos this time around. Because if you guys remember back in the day when they showed Killzone 2, boy, they got some shit for that. You know, this time around, they're like, fuck it. We're not going to risk it. We're going to show you what we got.
Except for Square Enix.
Except for Square Enix. But, you know, whatever.
Seriously, why did they blow this opportunity to actually do something worthwhile?
Because it's Square Enix.
Here's a tech demo and a promise of something Final Fantasy related at E3, but nothing really. There's no real reason for us to be here.
Let me stress this to you about Square Enix. This is a company that has countdowns for re-releases of games or web-based games, and
they
hype the shit out of
countdowns.
Yeah, so there you go. I mean, why are you questioning this?
Because I still have some strand of hope that they will actually become the company that I used to love, you know?
If they hire Hironobu Sakaguchi back, maybe, but I don't think so at this point. So
yeah, let's look at Atlas for your JRPG needs these days, folks. Anyway.
Yeah, that's kind of a little bit on this A side. But anyways.
Yeah.
So Deep Down, what did you guys think of that game?
Deep Down.
Yeah.
Not like
Dragon's Dogma 2.
What was that, like, email from Blanca at the end. Did you see that?
He was asking a friend for help, and maybe the friend can come and give him items in the game or help him out by joining his game. Or basically, it's like we were talking about helping someone out with their game.
Hmm. That's pretty much it. That's interesting. And also, one of the things, too, that I got from that is, wow, the MT framework. They're going to go with that for the next gen, too. Holy shit. I think I'm with Ted with this. I'm like, the fact that Yoshinori Ono came out, it's kind of a little, to me, like, I was hoping, like, maybe Darkstalkers for next gen. But, you know, at the same time, I'm like, meh, like Dragon's Dogma 2. I don't know. Do we need another fucking Dragon's Dogma game? I don't know.
I remember, you know, how hyped you were for Dragon's Dogma at one point.
So. I was hoping that game was going to be good.
Yeah, I remember you talking about that. It was slow. It was really slow.
Yeah.
I think that was the main problem with it.
Well, it probably had like a weird like identity crisis because it was trying to be like this really cool action game. At the same time, it was trying to be like Demon Souls.
Yeah.
You know, because that's like the plot, that's like the speed of Demon Souls. It's kind of, you know, very kind of calculating and plotting and stuff like that. So, anyways, Watch Dogs, you know, good showing. You know, pretty awesome game.
Yes, very good show.
I mean, they still have not talked about the multiplayer aspect. Like, when are they going to gonna show that part? Like, why? Like, is everybody going to be Aiden and stuff? Or is, you know, like how does that work?
Well, didn't, like, an early trailer show the camera, like, pan to a whole different character?
Mm-hmm.
But that's just kind of where the trailer ended, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, you know, it panned to a different character, and then it panned out to show multiple players actually playing in the same play field. So I'm like, so is this kind of like misdirection on Ubisoft's part and making you think, oh, you're going to play as Aiden, but you're actually multiple people and you have your own storyline and stuff like that?
I that's what I think. I bet you the single player campaign will have the player controlling a bunch of characters.
Hmm. Interesting.
I'm curious how it's going to look on the older consoles. I mean, it's great that it looks amazing for next gen, but it's going to be on PS3 and Xbox 360, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so I mean, I wonder what that's going to look like by comparison.
Mm-hmm. And I think something that Ted brought out earlier before we start recording is that this is also going to be available on the fucking Wii U.
Yeah.
Wii U.
So, I mean, holy shit, is this going to be available on every single platform? That is fucking crazy.
Despite that, I think, you know, I know Ari agrees with me. The more I see of this game, and whether, you know, no matter what we know about the multiplayer, the more I see of it, the more I want it, you know, the more, you know, intrigued I become, because I guess it's one of those titles that, you know, they show enough that you kind of expect certain things to happen, and you know what you're going to get into, but there's a mystery behind it. They're keeping it under wraps. So
I'm curious, like, how big of an open world it is, or if it even is an open world game. I mean, I think it is. It looks
They said it, if I remember correctly, they said something about a living city system or.
Yeah. So I imagine there's a whole city you can explore, but I don't know. I guess it's possible there's just set pieces all over the place.
Yeah, this is another one of those situations where we just don't know enough of the game to actually make any sort of judgment call. I mean, they're really saving the multiplayer aspect until the very last minute, which, you know, I really think that that's going to be like the biggest fucking deal of this whole, you know, this whole game and stuff. And they're just totally just hiding it from us, you know, like consciously for that matter.
We didn't get a release date, did we?
We did not.
Yeah. They're giving us enough that we want it, but they're still keeping enough hidden from us at the same time, which is kind of, you know, I don't know if it's a fuck up or actually pretty clever. So,
mm-hmm. So let's talk about the big, not so much, I guess, the big elephant in the room, but the stereoscopic 3D camera that comes with. I'm assuming it's going to come with the PlayStation 4, which is able to, quote unquote, able to detect depth and all this other stuff, which sounds suspiciously like the Kinect. I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
It sounds exactly like the Kinect, actually. Well, we already know from the eye camera that adding a PlayStation Move, which is basically incorporated now into the DualShock 4, to a camera equals a even better level of like one-to-one response in a video game than the Kinect does. So, sounds cool. I mean, nobody really uses Move, do they? But at least I guess the new controller will have that in there. So.
Well, fuck. Like, Ted, like, basically, like, it, you know, Ted, and, I don't know if Ted actually bought it. Ted, did you buy the sharpshooter attachment for the Move?
Yes. Oh, shit. I own every accessory for everything.
Like, I have my sharpshooter for, like, my PlayStation Move. Haven't used it since. Fuck.
You know what I'm surprised they didn't mention, which you just reminded me of, is 3D content. I mean, they put such a strong push on, like, 3D Blu-ray and 3D games for the PS3. Not a word about it today, was there?
That, and also what resolution the games are actually running. I mean, you know, not to say that, you know, I mean, I hope it's, like, 1080p, but, you know, I mean,
I'm hoping for Super HD.
4K?
4K. Let's see.
I don't know. I don't know if that's even, like, I don't know. Like, that's, again, it's so many, like, unknown questions.
If they're trying to sell TVs, they're going to put that feature into their new system. I mean, it seems.
Well, let's not get into, like, the whole reason why Sony is fucking failing and all that stuff. That's a whole different story altogether.
Well, they use PS3 to push Blu-ray. I think they'll use PS4 to push 4K HD.
You know, what was interesting about this event was we talked about how it was, what, a little over 2 hours, right?
Yeah. It's 2 hours.
Yeah. And while we got a lot of information, you know, while we got a lot of information about games and things like that, there's still a lot of things that we don't know. You know, I thought that was kind of interesting. You know, it kind of gave us a 2 hour taste of what's to come with this console.
Well, what
they got to say something for E3.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm.
What I did appreciate that what they did, though, is they basically came out and said, look, this is the idea behind the PlayStation 4. This is what it can do. This is our five tenets of what we believe the next gen is going to be. And they just fucking showed it. And they actually showed it in practical application. That's all they needed to do, because the fact that we even got games was basically Sony almost kind of like poking a stick at the lion, which is Microsoft, saying, hey, what are you guys doing, huh? What are you guys doing? Like it's almost what I felt was really funny about this whole, you know, next-gen saga that we're experiencing right now was pretty much like everybody at Sony basically said, we'll let Microsoft go first. We will let them release their console first. It's as if, you know, and kind of like now that we've seen what Sony has to offer, it's almost as if they were kind of, you know, like almost humoring Microsoft in a way, you know, like with their Durango and stuff like that. It's almost saying like, well, we know what we got is pretty much the shit. And that, you know, that's from Sony's like standpoint.
Now, what do we know about Xbox, the next Xbox, really?
I do have the specs on it, like rumored specs on it. But
there's no like release window. There's no games.
Nothing. Like it's similar to.
So, I mean, so basically people are acting as though Xbox went first, but really this is really PS3 going first, isn't it?
PS4, you mean?
A PS4, correct.
Yeah. Well, the rumor is that in April, we're actually going to be able to see the Durango in motion and stuff like that. But again, like, there's not a lot of information right now in regards to this. But
Can you imagine if PS4 launches first and then the next Xbox isn't as powerful?
We're just speculating right now, so.
Watch Dogs was amazingly beautiful to me, and it was a game that I didn't really have my eye on, and now it's probably something I'm going to pick up. One of the annoying things is now it's like, I guess the best console to get it on is going to be PS4. But then it's like, what about all my other consoles? It's like, man, I'm going through this thing again.
So, anyways, I'm actually looking at Chris's article, you know, that has like the leak specs and all that stuff. Sadly, the only thing that this really confirms is the fact that the system memory is going to be 8 gigabytes. Yeah. I mean, everything else is kind of like, you know, the resolution support up to 4096 by 2160, that's not even confirmed. So, I mean, all of this stuff is still kind of in question.
Said it was speculation.
I mean, it's really good speculation, so.
We'll know when E3 comes around. That's what they're waiting to show the console for.
I suppose so. So anyway, so.
Do you think the next Xbox will be this year?
It might have to be.
I mean, what do you guys think? Like, do you guys think that Microsoft needs to, like, beat, like, Sony to the punch?
They're probably going to release 1 week away from each other.
Ooh.
Yikes.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that
happened. Tough.
Or maybe they'll just fucking put it off for another year and try to come back with something even better.
The Xbox 360 is already 8 years old. It's just amazing that the Xbox is that old, and yet the games seem to look a little better than they do on PS3 for the most part, which is really unusual and mind-boggling. And straight
well, up, they weird. Play better.
Well, it goes. I don't know about play better, but I think a lot of it looking better goes back to, you know, what we talked about with the PS3 being a little more difficult to develop for and stuff, as opposed to the Xbox 360.
Yeah, the Xbox is more commonly the lead platform for games. So I guess on the PS3, you're more often dealing with ports.
Well, also, yeah. you're dealing with an ecosystem where, you know, they're developing on a more familiar, like, middleware. I mean, DirectX is pretty much universal for any sort of, you know, Western developer out there, since they've been working with that, you know, with that API for, like, fucking a decade now or so, you know? Like, more than a decade, for that matter. So that the biggest thing that Sony needed to kind of address is, well, if you're porting over from a DirectX platform, is it going to be easy for you to port it over to the PlayStation 4? And, you know, they pretty much clearly answered, yeah. And here's, like, Unreal Engine 4 running on the PlayStation 4 right now, by the way.
Well, they're also going to have really good developers kits, because that was a big problem with the PS3.
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys interested in hearing some of the leaked specs on Durango?
Yes. Yeah.
I've seen them already.
Well, yeah, but the other people haven't. So.
Yeah.
You asked me. I told you my answer. You asked me a question. I tell you what's going on.
I'm sorry, Ted.
Yes,
I'm
Alex,
sorry.
We would love to hear them.
Remember, I know everything.
Let's hear it. Let's hear about the Durango. That's what I want to do. Let's hear it. Let's hope that Xbox kind of has some more first party stuff than they did this generation. You know, I don't know. I guess that's one thing they kind of need. They need stronger. You know, I mean, Halo's a strong franchise. You know, and I guess you could say, would you guys say Fable's a strong franchise? But they need...
Not lately.
No, Fable's
not.
No.
Lately.
No, they've got Halo and they've got Gears of War.
Yeah, they need something more. I think they need some more franchises. I mean, Halo in itself is really strong, but they need, you know, they need more. I mean, Microsoft, Sony's got a ton of first parties. Nintendo, for fuck's sake, has got tons of first party franchises. So, I mean, Microsoft...
Yeah, they need more platformers. And RPGs.
They just need more anything.
Yeah. I don't play platformers anymore.
I
do. What do you think of the Xbox Live, the subscription? You think they'll get rid of that? Or
no.
No.
I know, League of Legends is still a good game, and I can play it on the PC for free. When am I going to see that kind of thing on Xbox and PlayStation? When am I going to get some free-to-play games, besides the fact that there's a bunch of free-to-play MMOs, which Sony does an absolutely horrible job of promoting that they have free-to-play games?
That's true.
Like DC Universe Online?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, guys. I have the specs on the RAM for Durango. This is a rumor. It is also 8 gigabytes of DDR3.
Ooh. Two less than five. That's like that time Fry and Futurama got the Z-ray instead of the X-ray, but the other direction, so I guess it would have been the U-ray.
Yeah, so there's going to be...
Except that's not... I screwed up my letters. It's a V-ray. You know, forget it. You can all tell jokes.
Let's not talk about a V-ray.
Yeah. So it also says, like, again, this is rumored specs of the Durango. It's going to run at 8 CPU cores running at 1.6 gigahertz each.
Okay.
It's gonna have a hard drive present, like ever present. It's gonna be packed in with a console, and that's all the pertinent information that I would want to share, because the rest is gibberish and hogwash to me.
Okay.
Will you be able to switch out the hard drive like you can on the PlayStation?
That I don't know.
Terabyte.
That we don't know, because again, these are based off of like base development kit specs. And those are just pretty much PCs that are built to specs of the final product. Because I mean really, like, development kits are PCs. They're not actually, you know, in the final, you know, like model of, you know, the final industrial design model that they're going to sell you and stuff. So, which is why, like, when we got that screenshot or that photo of the PlayStation 4 DualShock controller, it was right next to a PC, what it looks like a PC. But that's actually the PlayStation 4 development kit. You know,
what if the next Xbox has Windows 8 tiles?
We already have that now.
And yeah, and there's a potential that we probably are going to see that. I mean, if rumors are to be believed about the Durango and how it's going to be named the fucking Xbox Infinity because it's a goddamn 8 turned on its goddamn side, then holy shit, yeah, that's going to be a big joke. I'm not talking about as a joke, as in like, you know, haha, you guys are so stupid kind of thing, but it's like, you know, it's like, wow, it's the best you can come up with kind of thing, you know. Anyways, I digress. So anyways, I guess my last question to everybody, and I'll start with you, Anthony, is I'm going to assume that you had absolutely no prior opinions of the PlayStation 4 before. Has this changed your opinion of the PlayStation 4? If so, has Sony convinced you to actually get one at launch yet?
Well, here's the deal. They, you know, even though I ended up buying a Wii U, they did a much better job of convincing me to get one right off the bat than Nintendo did on the Wii U. So that's a plus. Second of all, I think, I think Sony's rectifying the mistakes that they made this generation. I mean, you know, to be honest, I think, you know, ultimately not right now at this point, Sony has the better lineup in the PlayStation 3 with exclusives and stuff, but it took them such a long time to get to that point because they screwed up at the beginning. And I think right now what we saw at the presentation, we saw them use some of their brands, you know, to promote this system, you know, like Infamous and, you know, Killzone and, you know, the Media Molecule game and whatever. I mean, they just came out of the bat just, you know, kicking and punching, just kicking ass, basically. You know,
like Parappa granted, the Rapper?
Yeah, Parappa the, they need a Parappa the Rapper 3, you know? I mean, Ari was talking about that earlier. He inspired me, so. but in all honesty, you know, I'm really convinced to get one. But to be fair, there's a lot of, you know, mysteries behind it. What is the price point? Again, you know, Sony cannot repeat that mistake. So.
The rumor is right now that it's coming out in November and that it's going to be priced around $400. Somebody said $420, but I think that's a joke. I'm thinking $400.
Okay.
No, $420. I'd actually be surprised if it was that cheap.
You think so?
It needs to be, but I'd still be surprised. Given that PS3 launched at $600, I mean,
the Xbox launched at like, you know, $400. I mean, it didn't do too bad.
If they bring it out at $400, that's Sony take my money.
Yeah.
That's one mystery. There's just a lot of other things we were talking about. You know, hard drive space on the Durango. What was the hard drive space on this thing?
They never talked about anything specifically about the processor or anything like that, other than the fact that it has 8 gigabytes of SDDR5.
Okay.
Or GDDR5. Sorry.
Yeah. So, in all honesty, you know, while this has me excited and convinced, in order to make a final decision, I'm going to wait till E3, though. Mm-hmm. But right now, they got me convinced at this point.
Yeah. So, how about you, Ari? Did Sony do their job, and are you hyped up? Are you hyped?
I'm as hyped as I can be unless I discover that my PC can do just as good a job of playing Watch Dogs. but as far as what they could have accomplished today with their conference and convincing me that it's a worthwhile product, yes, they succeeded.
Yeah, I mean, even that platform in itself is doing things that that'll take you a little bit, or I don't know, depending on how much time you put in it, quite a bit of effort to get things like that on your PC. I mean, the fact that, you know, you can kind of have that, you know, same couch experience on the PlayStation 4, I think that pretty much, like, you know, that is the PC still needs to kind of learn a couple of new tricks in order to get that sort of thing. So,
and in terms of just technical power, I would hope that when the PS4 launches, that it will outclass my current computer.
Well, you know, there's a difference between, you know, like building a computer and also building like a hardware that's dedicated to gaming. I mean, I would imagine the CPU, the actual OS overhead will be lower on a dedicated platform. So
yeah, but these systems are supposed to have 10-year life cycles. I mean, I guess that's the new standard for video game consoles.
Yeah.
So if this thing's going to last 10 years, it better come out the gate. You know,
honestly, sort of. I don't think they're going to try to stick with that. I mean, when Bungie was talking about how Destiny is going to be a 10-year thing, and then they said like, oh yeah, it's going to be on PS3, and I'm like, really? We're going to be playing PS3 in about 10 years from now? Yeah, yeah. Good luck. You know, I somehow doubt that. But you do have a point, though. I mean, there's a lot of like really interesting features that the PlayStation 4 has and stuff. So, how about you, Ted? What do you think? Like, did they convince you at all? To get a new PlayStation 4, I guess?
Well, I'll buy one anyway because I buy everything when it comes out because I don't know any better. And I've decided that they can just make all the promises they're going to make. Just like when they told me when the Xbox 360 came out, they could be user-generated content that we could sell. All the things they promised, not all of them are going to come true. Especially when they say, oh, with this Gaikai streaming, we're going to roll this out in phases. It's like, it's an excuse to say, eventually we're going to fuck this up. But you know what? We're going to buy one anyway, and we're going to forget they said all this stuff, just like they said the PlayStation 3 was the system that would let people achieve their dreams. Oh, wait, no, they said that about the PlayStation 2. No, wait, they said that about the Dreamcast. This shit has been going on for years. Yeah. And we can get excited, but more and more it's just going to be the same old thing. And we're going to buy it because that's what we have to buy to play all the games we want to play. The end. This is the cost of our habit.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Chris? I mean, you're probably like the most polarizing person in a group just because you can be so unpredictable sometimes when it comes to your tastes. So
I'm waiting for it. I really want this one. I you know, I really like the PlayStation. If they do away with the backwards compatibility, as long as I can transfer my games to the hard drive, you know, fine.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it'll be something that, you know, like we'll have to figure out. You know, like they'll have to figure out carefully because the whole reason why the PlayStation brand exists is because it's able to play a huge variety of media and stuff. So, I mean, it'll be rather interesting.
More Blu-ray, more expandable hard drive space, and you know.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, though, I mean, it doesn't really matter to me whether or not, you know, it came out this year or came out next year in terms of my personal space. Like, to me, like, When a first-party developer basically announces that they're making a completely amazing console, you know, with specs that are, like, completely out of this world, relatively out of this world compared to, like, anything that's out there on consoles right now, it signals a brand new wave of innovation that comes into video games. And, you know, people can argue that PCs are kind of immune to this, but PCs are directly affected by this because, you know, like, people can just reach a whole lot of people. I mean, developers can reach a whole lot more people, like, on consoles and stuff. And with the announcements of the features that, you know, that the PlayStation 4 is going to have, I mean, I wouldn't be too surprised if a lot of people, like, you know, Valve, for example, like, kind of look at this technology and say, hey, why didn't we think of that? We should probably try doing something like that and stuff. Like, this is, you know, it's signaling a whole new era of, like, online gaming again. Which, you know, is really interesting. And if anything, you know, I'm going to be open-minded about, you know, Durango and stuff, like Microsoft's new console. And I'm just looking forward to see, like, you know, what they're going to fire back, like how they're going to fire back at Sony and stuff. Because let me tell you, Gears of War and Halo and Fable's not going to be enough.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly.
But with that said, let's go to our mailbag of the day, our mailbox. And if you guys want to email us, we have, you know, you can reach us pretty much at mailbox@gamerize.com. By the way, sorry if I'm, like, really, like, kind of out of it. I just had, like, 3.5 hours of sleep, and I had, like, you know, I don't know, Newcastle, a Stella, a, you know, 2 Barbie dolls, and a couple of other, like, things of alcohol. So I'm a little bit hungover.
It kind of scared me when you said Barbie dolls, because I don't know what that is.
Barbie shots.
I don't want to know what that is.
It's two kinds of, like, anyways, that's like, you know, if we were going to be, like, you know, one of, like, the BioWare guys and stuff, this would have been, like, the cocktail hour for, like, Gamer Horizon. But in any case, this email is actually sent by Alan Caffrey, who's one of our fans on the website, and of course, you know, our Facebook page, I recognize that name. He says, I've got a question for the Gamer Horizon crew. With the production cost of games being so high for the PlayStation 4 and Xbox 720, do you think we're going to get some gaming gems developed by Japanese companies for the Wii U due to the cost? So, who wants to start this?
Okay, so my answer to that is, yeah, probably. But it's going to take some years before we get there. So for the time being, the next couple of years are going to be bumpy.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I got.
We're kind of seeing that now a little bit. I agree with Ted. You know, it's going to be bumpy, but we're kind of seeing that now. I mean, we have Bayonetta 2. We have that Shin Megami and Fire Emblem game. You know, we have kind of these niche titles coming out on the Wii U, and I don't think we'll see as many on the Durango or the PS4, you know, but I think we'll see a lot more niche titles on the Wii U. That's just what I think we'll be seeing a lot of. So,
I guess, you know, I think this is a better time for me to actually interject with my opinion on this. I think that the cost of games development is probably, yeah, it's probably going to escalate and stuff, but not so much compared to like what it was before. I mean, you know, I think the leap between the PlayStation 2 to the PlayStation 3, as an example, is like really significant. So, you know, you need a lot more art assets. But in this case, like, you know, we're kind of learning to like basically harness like, you know, the actual innate capabilities of the platforms and stuff. So I think that what you're going to see more is you're going to see more internal companies working together. And Activision actually started that, you know, as much as I'm critical of Activision, they did that. You know, Ubisoft is doing that with the Assassin's Creed series. They basically like, you know, have all of their internal studios working on one Assassin's Creed game and stuff. And, you know, I think that's just the general trend that we're going to see. But as far as like the Wii U is concerned, I'm not exactly sure whether or not like it's, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure that the Wii U is going to benefit out of this. I'm just not sure. So how about you, Chris? What do you think?
I mean, if it's cheaper to develop for, then maybe. But now you have to look at how many people are going to own the system and, you know, want to buy your game.
Mm-hmm.
So if, you know, if the numbers are right, then yes. If they're not, then you're still better off, you know, just using your budget and still pushing it to the bigger console because more people will have it.
It's pretty much a numbers game is what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, you develop with what you got. If you got the budget for a big game, you develop that game. If you don't, you still try and get it out there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how about you, Ari? What do you think?
I agree with Chris. Just because a system is capable of hyper-realistic graphics and many of the games for it have budgets that are tens of millions of dollars doesn't mean that Angry Birds can't be released on the PS4. So I think, you know, gaming gems are going to appear from Japanese developers on all of the systems and from, you know, all developers, really. I mean, there's no rule that says you have to max out the capabilities of a system in order to release a game on it.
Right. That's true.
Can I pose a question? I know we've got to wrap up, but just out of curiosity, you know, the whole question about, you know, Japanese developers being in a slump and all that, do you think they've improved in the last few years, anybody, or do you think they're still in the slump that a lot of people say they are?
I don't think they're in a slump. I think they just develop the games they want to develop for their own audience. And that stuff's just not, either not, a lot of it, the good stuff's not making it over here, or nobody wants it.
And there's also the gatekeepers. People keep forgetting about this very important thing. The first parties here in the United States need to approve your game in order for it to be released here. End of story. If they say no, you're not getting that game out of here. You know, that's really all it is. That's the most basic premise. Like, before a game comes out here, you'd have to basically make a case for it to Sony, Microsoft, or Nintendo. That's really it. And but in it's different for, you know, like for Nintendo's case, because sometimes they hold the keys to the kingdom, like Xenoblade. So, yeah. So that's pretty much my opinion of it. So, any closing words about that, guys?
Well, nothing. I just hope to see more Japanese game on any console.
I'd love to see the more success from those developers too.
Okay. All right. So that's hopefully we answer your question, Alan. And of course, if you guys want to email us any questions, you can email us at mailbox@gamerhorizon.com. So, and that about does it for this episode, guys. Holy crap. I actually survived through the fucking hangover and whatnot. So,
I think whatnot's going to be the next drinking game.
That probably, right? Holy shit. Like,
first it was Indeed and now whatnots and sexual jokes.
Oh, man. Okay. I promise next week is going to be better. Right now, my brain is fried. So until next week, when my brain is not fried, visit the website, GamerHorizon.com. Check out all the upcoming reviews we got. We got, like, articles from, you know, Ted, Ari, you know, Anthony, Chris, you know, with all the games that are coming out. And I guess as a teaser, we got a special surprise coming for you, like, this March. So hopefully you guys visit the website, and we'll see you guys next week. Just